Good morning. I'm Agnes Williams with the Indigenous Women's Initiatives here at the Network of Religious Communities. You're listening to Crossroads, a production, a joint production of the network and Town Square Media. Today, we are going to be talking with John Kane, and he is going to be talking about the compact and also about the recent displacement conference that we had here in Buffalo. And I want to welcome everyone this morning. And John, maybe you could give us a little bit about your own introduction and how you got involved with this this event.
Well, first I want to thank you, Agnes, for inviting me onto your program. Again, it's been a while, but I appreciate you, you reaching out to me. I do radio and I do a podcast. I do a radio show called Resistance Radio on WBAI in New York City. And that show also airs on WPFW in Washington, D.C. The show goes up as a podcast as well. And I do a podcast called Let's Talk Native. Look, I'm more of an activist with a microphone than I am just a radio show host. And it's because of the work that I've done throughout most of my life, adult life, as an activist on many Native issues that I came to be involved with so many of these topics, including the Seneca gaming issue. I was invited to be a part of the displacement summit that was held a couple of weeks ago here in Buffalo. And the reason we fit into that conversation is, frankly, because of the Seneca Nation in particular here in Western New York being displaced by New York State in the gaming market, a market that is almost their sole source of public finance, and yet still seems to be squeezed by, regardless of party, by the state government in terms of its gaming revenue, even as the state expands its gaming in Western New York and displaces a market that was established by the Seneca Nation in the first place.
Right. And there is actually a federal law, the National Indian Gaming Act, that really prescribed that the states could not profit from Indian gaming or just become a front for profits and use profits from Indian gaming. And that's also has in the I guess it's in the Department of the Interior. They do have oversight on this, but that wasn't really set up when we started 20 years ago. So we've been coming to the end of this 20-year compact, and the last year has been quite tumultuous for all of us in terms of negotiating or even trying to get the attention of the state to negotiate a new 20-year compact. And I really seen this as a way to that the state has just kind of sat on it in order to kind of force us into this just renewing what we had before, which was a very economically unprofit. It was like a 49-51 split of the monies. And it was a lot of money that the Seneca Nation did give to the state over a 20-year period that in the original compact was supposed to go to the local communities for economic development. And this has always been my agenda here, that I wanted the general public to know that that's their money. It really wasn't the state money, and we didn't really see any economic development. And as we all know, we had the shootings at the Tops in Buffalo, and just to kind of highlight the fact that there was no economic development in the East Side. And so the question remains, you know, where did all the people's money go?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the National Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, or IGRA. You know, in the wake of a lot of the attention given to Killers of the Flower Moon, the film about the murders of the Osage over their oil revenue, I think a lot of people who will have seen that movie and have seen that movie would be appalled by the level of, I don't know, the way that the Osage were treated as incompetents, and that they couldn't manage their own oil revenue. They couldn't even manage their own personal finances. And that's the way the federal government set it up. And I bring this up because the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, for all intents and purposes, does this, the same thing to the native gaming industry. It treats native gaming interests as if we are incompetent, untrustworthy, and incapable of running a business without having government oversight. And the government oversight, the guardians that the federal government places in native gaming, are the states. So they put the states in the Seneca's gaming business, for instance, even as the state is their competition. And so, but and you're right, there are stipulations within the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act that say, first off, first and foremost, that the native gaming operation is the native territories doing these things are supposed to be the primary beneficiary of the gaming operation. And frankly, even in the absence of the forced revenue sharing that New York State has done to the Seneca Nation, the Western New York area is the primary beneficiary anyway. Right. Look, most of the employees are non-native. All of the revenue that comes into the Seneca Nation goes immediately back into the Western New York economy. And you're right. While the more marginalized communities are not the beneficiaries of this boon that the Seneca Nation has created in terms of the economic impact, even the amount of money that was supposed to go to the state and ultimately come back to the communities has not served those communities. And so when we look at Salamanca or we see Niagara Falls or Buffalo, we see that those areas are still very, very economically depressed, especially in and around the gaming enterprises. Mm-hmm. So you're right. I mean, I think the people should demand more accountability on how the revenue that came back to Western New York, which is only 25%, by the way, came back to Western New York, how it's been utilized in their communities, because I don't think they've seen the benefits of it.
So it was only 25% of the 49% that the state received.
Well, and you say 49%, but it's really almost a 50-50 split, because if you look at over the 21 years of the gaming compact that has been in place, the Seneca Nation received $2.4 billion, and the state received $2.2 billion. Now, but that difference between the two is only the same amount that the Senecas withheld because of an earlier gaming dispute over the state's breaching of the compact. And in that contentious period that ended in 2013, the Seneca Nation withheld originally $600 million, but negotiated with the state to keep $200 million of that money that was escrowed. So if you had flipped that the other way around, the state would have actually been a bigger recipient of direct gaming revenue than the Seneca Nation. And out of that $2.2 billion that the state received from the Seneca Gaming, only a quarter of that comes back to Western New York. The rest of it leaves the area altogether. And nobody ever talks about the negative impact of that many dollars, that much money leaving Western New York. And you're talking over $1.5 billion that is left Western New York, and none of that comes back. Only the 25% ever came back.
Mm-hmm. So there is this economic inequality and injustice that we're talking about here is kind of, you know, when people see money and start talking about that, you know, sometimes they kind of get their eyes blur over, you know, it's kind of like, I don't understand that. But the reality is that, you know, for 20 years, and now we're in the position of renegotiating a new compact because the deadline was, December 9th, our compact expired. There was an extension. And what really is the state of the compact now?
Well, right now, the state of New York and the Seneca Nation administration has agreed to operate under the terms of the now expired compact.
Right.
What's not clear is where revenue sharing stands and all that. Because getting back to one of the first things that you noted in your introduction, the states are prohibited from imposing a fee on Seneca on native gaming. Right. They're prohibited. There is no system that says that allows the state to tax or claim revenue from to claim or take revenue from native gaming operations. What there is there's an allowance if the state provides a concession that is meaningful, substantial, and quantifiable, by the way, that the Senecas or a native gaming operation could make a revenue sharing payment to the state. That has taken on a whole different complexion over the course of these 20 years. And what turned out, what started out as this idea of sharing revenue has become the state imposing its revenue, especially coming out of an arbitration ruling back stemming from the end of the first period of that compact in 2016. So now, during this last 7 years, the Senecas have been forced to pay 25% of the net slot drop, which, like I said, is closer to 50% of the net revenue over the last 7 years. Forced to pay it. So when you extend that compact, and that language is not in that compact that says that they should have paid not only for the last 7 years, but going forward, the question remains, during this extension period, is the Seneca Nation compelled to pay revenue sharing to the state of New York? Because one of the things that I question, and I don't ever get a real good answer from this, especially from Seneca leadership, is if the Seneca Nation was taking the position when they entered the final renewal period of the compact, which started at the end of 2016, the Senecas were not going to pay anymore. In fact, they stopped paying. They stopped paying the state of New York because there was no language in the compact that said they were to pay the last 7 years. There's no terms, there's no provisions, there's no percentages laid out in the written compact that they would pay for this during this renewal period. And if that language isn't in there, then how is it that the Senecas are being forced to pay now? And, you know, so I think that's part of the question that still remains, even as the Senecas enter into this renewal period, which the intent is that they will operate under the previous compact until they can negotiate a new compact going forward.
So the other, that's not in the federal law that we have to, it's our choice whether we're going to revenue share with them.
There is no provision in the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act that says the Seneca Nation or any nation must commit to revenue sharing with the state. There is no provision in there. In fact, it was only because of certain relationships, you know, initially, I think, with the Pequots that worked something out with the state of Connecticut, where an agreement was made. But those agreements for revenue sharing are supposed to be approved, authorized, and scrutinized by the Interior Department. And you're right, the Interior Department is supposed to have oversight, but frankly, the Interior Department has not exercised any oversight. This is over 30 years that this gaming compact has been in place, and the Interior Department has never provided adequate oversight on how much the states are essentially forcing payments upon Native gaming interests.
In our community, a lot of people see the revenue share really as our economic impact on Western New York. Because, you know, the Senecas are one of the largest employers or the largest employer in Western New York. And in the last 20 years, we've poured, you know, all this money into, you know, not only the money that we've given through the compact, but our own money, because we buy all our goods and services off the reservation and in the community, that, you know, we really do build up Western New York. So it's not like us versus them anymore, but there always is that adversarial kind of stereotype that the state likes to run, you know. Well, you know, it's like those old policies of the only good Indian's a dead Indian, and then now this oversight and this continual trust relationship that has been used. And originally the federal law was really supposed to be to keep the criminal element, which was one of the major reasons, you know, that a lot of people...
I kind of challenge that, though, really. Yeah. Look, there's no question that when the federal government passed the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, it was about taking something from us. It was not providing us with anything.
Right.
The fact is, a little over a year prior to that, the Supreme Court had ruled that there was no underlying federal statutory framework for the states or the federal government to regulate Native gaming. And once the Supreme Court had made that ruling in the Cabazon case out in California, then there was this scurrying effort to create something that would put controls over on us. And yeah, they say that it was to keep criminal element out, and they say that it was to ensure that we were the primary beneficiary. But, you know, again, even within the absence of revenue sharing, Western New York is the primary beneficiary of our gaming. It is estimated, when they've done economic impact studies, $1.3 billion a year of economic activity a year comes out of into Western New York from Seneca Gaming. Now you throw this into the mix, this whole idea that they're taking 50% of the revenue. And I think it's important to realize that, again, the Seneca Nation, their sole source of public finance is that gaming revenue. And the fact that 50% of it is being given up to the state is really kind of ludicrous.
Right. So I just want to do our little commercial here. You're listening to Crossroads, production, a joint production of the Network of Religious Communities and Town Square Media. My name is Agnes Williams. I'm a Seneca, and I'm with the Indigenous Women's Initiatives. And we're talking with John Kane today about the New York State Gaming Compact with the Seneca Nation of Indians and about the economic injustice that has been going on for 20 years and how we're and the challenges that we're facing. Now, there's a lot of things that people don't know about the compact. It's a pretty complicated subject for some, but I asked you to come and invited you because as I've been listening to the different speakers on the subject, you've been able to kind of give us a good overview of a lot of the different elements of it, and also, you know, to give the public an idea about how they can help us gain a fairer compact. Now, all of that, when we were talking about the split, the 49 and the 51 percentage or the 50-50 split, the state doesn't pay anything into the development. They don't have to pay any bills. They don't have to do any of that. And there's no other businesses around that actually have a partner that doesn't have to pay the bills. They only get to collect the money. And so that's, you know, part of the injustice, you know, how the state, you know, why is that? You know, why don't they have to put anything into the development of the business, and why do they get all of this money?
Well, and the whole idea of revenue sharing is supposed to be based on the state giving something up. And the so-called concession that the state purported to make was one of exclusivity in the gaming market. But the fact of the matter is, the Seneca Nation is giving this money to the state of New York almost for nothing. And the state offering this exclusivity, what they were offering was exclusivity on Class 3 gaming machines, slot machines, essentially. Mm-hmm. The state of New York couldn't do slot machines. It was against their state constitution. They could not do Class 3 gaming. So they didn't give anything up to the Seneca Nation for that revenue sharing. And in fact, they would actually changed their constitution so they could put Class 3 slot machines. But even during that period of time they couldn't, they were putting Class 2 slot machines. They converted the racetracks into essentially casinos. That's what they called them.
Right.
And they filled them up with, well, they call them racinos now, but they were calling them casinos in the beginning.
Right.
And they filled them up with slot machines. Now they call them electronic games. But they did all this in direct competition to the Seneca Nation. So to the extent the Seneca Nation was supposed to be provided with some level of exclusivity, the state has done everything that it legally could to take market share away from the Senecas. And not just with their lotteries and the racetracks and then these racetrack casinos, but they've done so now with sports betting, now with mobile betting, with any number of other ways the state has continued to expand its gaming in the market that essentially the Seneca Nation built in the first place. So the idea that the Seneca Nation is paying for an exclusivity, again, according to the Interior Department, that exclusivity, that concession by the state has to be substantial and quantifiable. No one, not the Interior Department, no gaming experts, any place, nobody with this experience has ever come through and said, well, here's what the value is of the concession that the state made. In fact, the Indian Gaming Commission in Washington has asserted quite clearly that the concession that the state provided was inadequate and that the Senecas were clearly overpaying for whatever concession the state had made. So I think when people ask, well, what is it the state has done? No, they've made no investment. They've done nothing to facilitate these gaming facilities to be successful. If anything, they've utilized the Seneca building a gaming market so they could enter that market and take market share away.
So the state now has agreed to this extension. And if there's no new compact made, is that true that they're just going to extend the old compact?
Well, I think they'll continue to extend it. Look, according to the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, a native gaming operation is supposed to exist with a compact with the state that surrounds them. And
for Class 3,
which is
table games.
Yeah, well, and the slot machines and yeah. table games. So that's the way it's supposed to be. Now, the fact that the gaming compact has expired and they're supposed to renegotiate, this is supposed to be done with the state negotiating in good faith. And there has been no good faith negotiation. A lot of the stuff has been very confidential. Most of the information doesn't come out until somehow there's a leak in the information. So,
and we even had the strong arming with them freezing all the bank accounts, not only just of the gaming money, but all the money that the Seneca Nation...
Yeah, the entire operating accounts of the entire Seneca Nation was frozen by Kathy Hochul. So to squeeze $560 million out of them during the last dispute over gaming revenue, then she turned around and gave most of that money to the billionaire in Western New York who owns the Buffalo Bills to build a new stadium. So,
and yeah, most of our people are still, living very close or under the poverty line.
Yeah, 30% of Seneca Nations live of Seneca residents still live at or below the poverty level. So, and again, I can't emphasize enough how much this money funds the entire Seneca Nation. And look, and if $2.4 billion sounds like a lot of money, I think we need to put that in perspective. Two school districts, Williamsville and Lancaster, for instance, these school districts here, their operating budgets are twice the size of the Seneca Nation's annual operating budget. Twice the size. So even if the Seneca Nation kept all $4 billion that it generated over the last 21 years, it still would operate only an annual budget less than two of the school districts in Western New York. And I'm not even saying they're the two most expensive school districts. I'm just saying that has to put things in perspective. $2 billion may not be a lot of money to New York State, but it's a lot of money to the Seneca people, and it could go a long way to providing better mental health services, elder services, housing, all kinds of stuff. And again, keep in mind that the money that goes into the Seneca Nation, again, goes right back into the Western New York economy because we don't have the service industries, we don't have the retail industries. We've got a couple of areas that we do business. Gas, gaming, cigarettes, and now cannabis. But that's most of the dollars that any of us bring into the Native community leaves the Native community immediately.
Right. And then the money that was given to the state, there's no accountability built into this compact on the state's part to the people of New York State.
No, and just looking at what Kathy Hochul did with the last batch of money that she got, she essentially gave the state's share, not the community share, but she gave the state's share to a billionaire to build a football stadium. And there is no economist that has ever suggested that building a new football stadium or any kind of arena has a positive economic impact on the area. And for all the Bills fans out there and that kind of thing, look, this is not something that's going to be an economic boon to any of the marginalized people in Western New York.
Basically, most of us need is grocery stores, and we need housing, and we need health care. And all of those things are underfunded drastically here in these communities, East Buffalo, Salamanca, New York, Niagara Falls. And that money should be coming back. The state has been hanging on to it, whatever they did do with it, and that is what we're asking the community to make the state accountable for. What did they do with all of that money for the last 20 years? And it's something that we don't want to continue with New York State. The Senecas don't want to continue to keep giving them this money where they're not accountable to the people of New York State.
Well, and I think the thing that New York State residents have to first and foremost be aware of is that the state has no right to take money from the Seneca Nation. I mean, there is no you know, this idea that somehow the state is being paid for giving permission for native gaming, that's wrong. It's simply false. The fact of the matter is the state is entitled to none of the Seneca Nation's gaming revenue. They're entitled to none of it. And so for those who just think, well, the Seneca should pay something, keep in mind that, again, it is the sole source of public finance for over 8,000 people who live in who are part of the Seneca Nation. It's the sole source of public finance. It's not that much money when you put it into perspective with other large entities that have, you know, sometimes, you know, half a billion dollar annual operating budgets.
Yeah, I think that's a challenge in front of us, is just getting control of the money, that it's not all just going into the entertainment industry. You know, the Buffalo Bills are rich. Everybody loves the Bills, but it doesn't, you know, feed our kids, and it doesn't provide housing or health care for us either in all of our communities here in Western New York. And that New York State really does need to be more accountable to the people for the money that they have gotten. And the Seneca's really, you know, we've really talked a lot about trying to give that money directly to the local communities that are being impacted by our casinos, because it just seems to be most of it, a lot of it, floating downstate.
Well, and there's no community that's more deserving of the money than the Seneca community. And the bottom line is the money should stay with the Seneca Nation, and let the Seneca Nation develop an economy that, where their economy benefits Western New York. As it is, we don't really have a true economy on Native territories. Right. We have a few areas of business, but we don't have the ability for a dollar to come into our community and change hands more than one or two times. And if you don't have a dollar come into your community and change hands at least three times within your community, you're not truly benefiting from the economic development.
Well, I really appreciate you coming in. I know you have a lot of business that you do on the radio too. You have a couple podcasts. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I do. Again, I do a radio show that goes up as a podcast. My radio show is called Resistance Radio. It airs in New York City on Thursdays at 3 p.m. On WBAI. That same show airs in Washington, D.C. on Fridays at 2 p.m. on WPFW. I also do a podcast called Let's Talk Native, and I address a lot of these issues. I also produce YouTube videos. Sometimes they're short-form videos that are only 8 or 10 minutes long that talk about everything from gaming to public policy and that kind of stuff as it impacts Native people. So
the best way, if people want to get more information from you about this topic or other topics on Natives, it's the best way for them to contact you through the Facebook?
I have two Facebook pages. One associated with Let's Talk Native and one associated with the Resistance Radio. All of my contact information is on there, so you can get a hold of me either through Facebook Messenger, or look for my contact information on Facebook, and people can contact me that way.
And I really appreciate you coming in, because this can be a real sleeper issue at times, and then other times people get real riled up about it when they think about all that money and how poor we all are. And, you know, wondering, where the heck did that money go? So that we really do need the support from the community to make the New York State accountable for all this money that they've been taking from the Senecas for the last 20 years.
Well, I think it's important that people realize that, in spite of the fact that the Seneca Nation has gaming enterprises, the Senecas are not rich people. And it is not this affluent society that somehow people should be looking at with big eyes. They still remain very marginalized people. And frankly, we would be better served to work with other marginalized people than to be funding either the Democrats or the Republicans sitting in the New York's legislature or governor's mansion.
And we're in a good position now with a lot of different changes in leadership and the politicians. You know, there's a change of the guard somewhat, and we'd like to see more and more people put the Senecas and Natives on their political agenda as well. We're still here. We benefit with all of our goods and services that we purchase in New York State. And we're going to continue to benefit the rest of the region, and just hoping that people will continue to support us, to challenge Kathy Hochul and all the people that are spending the money, that they have to be accountable to the people of New York State.